Whether you choose to believe that the present Yonge Mingyur Rinpoche has carried the same broad range of practical and intellectual skills through successive incarnations, or has mastered them through a truly exceptional degree of personal diligence, is up to you. What distinguishes the current Yonge Mingyur Rinpoche from previous holders of the title is the worldwide scale of his influence and renown. While previous incarnations of the Yonge Mingyur Rinpoche line of tulkus has been somewhat limited by the geographical and cultural isolation of Tibet, circumstances have conspired to allow the current holder of the title to communicate the depth and breadth of his mastery to an audience of thousands, extending from Malaysia to Manhattan to Monterey. Titles and pedigrees, however, offer little in the way of protection against personal difficulties, of which Yonge Mingyur Rinpoche certainly has had his share. As he relates with great candor, though raised by a loving family in an area of Nepal noted for its pristine beauty, he spent his early years plagued by what would probably be diagnosed by Western specialists as panic disorder. When he first told me about the depth of anxiety that characterized his childhood, I found it hard to believe that this warm, charming, and charismatic young man had spent much of his childhood in a persistent state of fear. It's a testament not only to his extraordinary strength of character, but also to the efficacy of the Tibetan Buddhist practices he presents in this, his first book, that he was able, without recourse to conventional pharmaceutical and therapeutic aid, to master and overcome this affliction. Rinpoche's personal testimony is not the only evidence of his triumph over devastating emotional pain. In 2002, as one of 8 long-term Buddhist meditation practitioners participating in a study conducted by Antoine Lutz, Ph.D., a neuroscientist trained by Francisco Varela, and Richard Davidson, Ph.D., a world-renowned neuroscientist and a member of the Board of Scientific Counselors of the National Institute of Mental Health, Yonge Mingyur underwent a battery of neurological tests at the Weizmann Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin. The tests employed state-of-the-art fMRI technology that, unlike standard MRI technology, which provides only a kind of still photograph of brain-body activity, captures a moment-by-moment pictorial record of changing levels of activity in different areas of the brain. The EEG equipment used to measure the tiny electrical impulses that occur when brain cells communicate was also quite sophisticated. Whereas a typical EEG procedure involves attaching only 16 electrodes to the scalp in order to measure electrical activity at the surface of the skull, the equipment used in the Weizmann lab employed 128 electrodes in order to measure tiny changes in electrical activity deep within the subject's brains. The results of both the fMRI and EEG studies of these 8 trained meditators were impressive on 2 levels. While practicing compassion and loving kindness meditation, the brain area known to be activated in maternal love and empathy was more prominently activated among long-term Buddhist practitioners than among a group of control subjects who had been given meditation instructions 1 week prior to the scans and asked to practice daily. Yonge Mingyur's capacity to generate such an altruistic and positive state was truly amazing, since even people who don't suffer panic attacks frequently experience feelings of claustrophobia when lying in the narrow space of an fMRI scanner. The fact that he could focus his mind so capably, even in a claustrophobic environment, suggests that his meditation training overrode his propensity for panic attacks. More remarkably, the measurements of the long-term practitioner's EEG activity during meditation were apparently so far off the scale of normal EEG readings that, as I understand it, the lab technicians thought at first that the machinery might have been malfunctioning. After hastily double-checking their equipment, though, the technicians were forced to eliminate the possibility of mechanical malfunction and confront the reality that the electrical activity associated with attention and phenomenal awareness transcended anything they'd ever witnessed. In a departure from the typically cautious language of modern scientists, Richard Davidson recalled in a 2000